Welcome to Hot Breath Comedy Fam. On Monday, May 13th, I am teaching a clean comedy workshop. The last four I have taught sold out very quickly. So if you want to learn about clean comedy, the business side, where the line is, how to write clean comedy, go to the link in the description of this episode and we'll see you there.
What's goody, Hot Breath Averse? Welcome back to Hot Breath, the show where you learn comedy from the pros. I'm your host, comedian Joel Byers, and our guest today started his comedy career during a college trip to South Africa. Shortly after, moves to San Francisco, climbs up through the ranks there where he gets to open up for comedians like Andrew Schultz, who he has since gone on the road with, he has since written for on Schultz's Netflix show, Schultz Saves America. And following the Schultz model, our guest today has started to create his own opportunities on social media, going viral, posting crowd work clips, sketches, and a lot more we'll get into today, because you'll learn there's not that much out there about him yet, because we like to catch that next wave of comedy stars coming up in the game, and this guy is definitely one of them. So please welcome, Hot Brethren and Sistren, to the Hot Breathverse, the one and only Joey the Hammer Avery.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Hammer Avery.
You did your homework. That's crazy.
I studied up for you,
People are usually like, damn, so how did you start? And then I have to say all that.
Well, I want this to be like inside the actor's studio for comedians.
Yeah. Cool.
Inside the comedian's shitty studio apartment.
This is pretty lit.
Now, look out there. This is sick. But I mean, most comedians, but I don't live here.
Yeah. You're like, I'll be sleeping here later.
Yeah. 100%.
Wait, you're in the middle of your first, national headlining tour, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
how's it been going, man?
It's been great. I mean, it's definitely, it's city to city. When it's your first tour, you kind of learn. You could be the man in some markets, and who the fuck is that? Another, if I can swear, I don't.
Yeah. Let it rip.
Yeah. So some markets you realize, I guess I don't have fans here, and other markets it's great, but it has just been cool to get to do that much stand up. Actually getting to do. I had one stretch where I probably did 24 hours of comedy in 22 days. I've never experienced that before, so definitely levels you up.
Yeah. And what are some of those rough ones you had mentioned? What's kind of been the highs and lows of this? Because what you're doing right now is basically what every comedian is aspiring to do right now: blow up on social media, go on a tour, start selling tickets. But what is the reality of that dream?
The reality is, I think with everything, I mean, comedy's like anything else. It's like you have an idea of what you want to happen, and then the second you get there, you have a brand new challenge that you're stressed about. So I try to remind myself, because when I get the emails from my agent that's ticket counts, I'm like, oh shit, all right, we got it, we got work to do. But I also remind myself, this is actually was the dream for the first decade of doing this, was just to have a chance to go on the road and headline and figure it out. So you have to figure out, I mean, the reality of it is you have to do a lot of stuff you didn't think you were going to do when you're a comic. It is editing clips so that those get exposure. People can see what city you're in, or I'm, doing data management for email lists and,
really? Shit.
So, yeah, it sucks.
What do you mean data management?
Basically making sure that, I don't want to be too boring about it, I've had some issues with geolocating when I send out my emails to people who filled out my email submission form. Mm-hmm. And so I'm figuring out all these ways to gather zip codes and all this shit that's just really boring.
Yeah, the administrative side of this.
Exactly.
We're I thought I would just write jokes, perform, and then be famous.
Right. Now you're an email marketer and a Photoshop graphic designer and a thousand other things. But the beauty of it is it's up to you now, which is great.
Do you do everything still?
For the most part, yes, but now sometimes I can hire out help. So sometimes I have someone shoot my shows and edit the clips, but I'm still very involved in that process. Other times I'm the one who sets up all the cameras, shoots my stuff, edits the angles, posts it all, makes the cover art and all that shit.
Dude.
Yeah.
What's crazy is I just interviewed Ian Bagg on here.
Uh-huh.
And he's been doing it over 30 years. He's known as the crowd work guy.
Yeah.
During the pandemic, he hit rock bottom,
got a lot of dark thoughts. At one time, he talked about how he thought about killing himself so his wife could get the insurance money. Like, that's where he was at in his career.
God damn.
And at that moment, he just fired his whole team, hired an editor, and then he blew up. Now he's going viral, selling out.
What was his whole team?
Managers, agents, all of the infrastructure a comedian thinks they do.
Right.
He replaced them with a 21-year-old editor. And then just boom.
I could see at some point in time, the representation being a Swiss Army knife, a manager who also is great at editing. And that would be great. The hope is you want to get to a point where you're it is funny now, comics, to be a successful comic, you have to basically run a small business.
Yeah.
You know, which is good and bad. I don't hate that, because again, it means it's up to you and it's not just you're at the whim of Hollywood and whether you're hot or not. But you do have to be it's not just going on stage and telling jokes anymore.
But it's also a comic 3 months in who is I got to figure out how to go viral before they even figure out a punchline.
Yeah.
So there's that aspect of it too.
I remember I went viral pretty early on. I was a couple years in and I had something pop on the stand-up subreddit.
Uh-huh.
I was I'm going to be this shit. And I started posting all this shit and nothing else worked. I was okay, for sure. That was one. That's all right.
What are you seeing that is working? Because we're all kind of blindly just basically playing the lottery every time we post. Are you starting to see consistent themes or topics, or is production quality a big deal? What's kind of the formula there?
I think it's all relatively simple, in the sense of whatever gets people to watch is what all the algorithms are geared towards, is people watching and staying on the platform. So your best chance is something that looks good and sounds good, so that people don't just immediately go, ugh, and not give it a chance. But I have tried to think about all the angles. This is a hot topic. This is not. And what's working and all that. And I really do think that in general, it's the stuff that's the funniest, that's the quickest, that makes people feel something is what's going to work.
Oh, makes them feel something.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, if it inspires debate, if people start, I used to get upset when people were fighting in the comments, because I was this is not what I'm trying to do. I don't want to upset anyone. And now people get mad in the comments and I'm that's watch time. Yeah, that's all engagement. let it rip,
Uh-huh.
So contributing to division and the downfall of society, I think, is now our purpose.
It's no longer bringing people together to laugh. It's how can we divide them with crowd work?
Yeah. You mentioned Schultz earlier. He said something to me that I remembered. He was because I used to make these sports betting videos that I thought were funny, and my friends would text me the most. They liked them the best, but they never did well. And he was just the stuff that goes viral is not, comics are very self-centered. We want to think oh, look at me. This is me doing something cool. Aren't people going to like that? He's the stuff that goes, that's shareable, is stuff that makes people feel like it's about them. They'll send something to their friends. Oh, this is so relatable. This is so us. Or it's some political point that they kind of feel, but they didn't know how to articulate it.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be actually, this is what I think about this. I'm going to send this to people around the office. And I thought that was an interesting way to think about it, is oh, is this going to make people feel anything? Because if so, they'll share it.
Yeah, that's what I've heard him say, is he would talk about certain demographics in the audience, because then that demographic would share it with other demographics that they know.
Yeah, he'd be going viral in Somalia.
Right.
You know? Yeah. all right, well, better not piss them off. You know? Some fucking pirates over there, dude. Yeah.
Well, you've probably seen him from the jump thing, because you opened for him way back in the day at comedy clubs.
Yeah. Yeah, I met him in Sunnyvale. There's a club called Rooster Tea Feathers.
Uh-huh.
And at the time, he was half selling out this club that's next to a tire store, and it's fun room, shout out to them. But
but
I've got to see that too. I think he's teasing that he's going to be doing Madison Square Garden. So
yeah,
it's been fun to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you guys keep in touch? You guys are.
Yeah. Yeah.
What other advice is he given you? What have you learned from being that close to the sun, essentially?
It's cool to, he's really helpful with his advice, and anyone would say this, he takes a time out to give a lot of people career advice and mm-hmm. just really share and try to be a good person and try to be helpful, which is so cool and something that I think you want to pass on as you get a little bit of success. But I think some of the coolest stuff is just, he obviously his advice, but just watching the team that he's built
and seeing how he's built that. And, you know, he's like, everyone there is a expert in their own thing, and he'll hire anybody. He just hired this kid, Chifty, who's like a, he's like 18. I don't know. He's 19. Super young kid, but he was like a really talented YouTube editor. And so he had, was just like, great. Yeah. If you want to join the team, like, can make it happen, which is, it's cool.
He just moved. Shifty, like, just moved up to New York. Like,
yeah.
Schultz was like, all right, you got the job. And Shifty, like, graduated and then just moved.
Yeah, York, exactly.
For, like, no money.
It's kind of to your point. It's, like, hyper-specialized. Like, he is really, really good at a certain style of editing. Great. We'll get that.
Yeah.
You know, we don't need, I don't know, you know, like, that. You need very people who are good at stuff that you can't do yourself. Like, when I'm looking at editing, I can do a lot of it myself. So when I hire someone, it's usually either I'm having bandwidth issues or it's, like, I have a really specific idea for something cool. I can't do that. I need to get an editor who's really good.
Do you edit your, like, city skits when you're running for mayor? You edit all that?
Sometimes. I have edited some of those myself, but a lot of times I'll send those to my buddy Timmy Durgan, who's great. And he,
oh,
he adds stuff that I can't. And always, whenever I get the edit back from him, I'm like, oh, that's so much better.
Yeah.
So much better. Yeah, I met him working at Chubby's clothing brand, and he was like doing a bunch of their edits, and he helps me out with stuff. So.
Yeah, do you still work for them?
I have been part-time for the last few months, so it's like I used to be very heavily involved, and I was part-time, and I was kind of just helping with copy and like helping supplement like the upfront cost of going on tour with some needs that they still have.
Right.
And I think as of next week, the end of next week, I'll officially have no more day job.
Now.
Which is great, except for the fact that my tour is also winding down. So, be looking for new ways to make money. I'll be on the pole here, Magic City.
Yeah, we got to have multiple streams, man. You know, the community
100%
over leveraged.
100%. Yeah.
I learned that during the pandemic of like overnight, I'm unemployed as a comedian. I was like, oh, what else is there?
Yeah. Are you full time?
Yeah.
How long have you been?
I've been doing stand-up 13 years, and I probably went full-time 8 or 9 years in, I think.
It nice. Was. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
I know. I knew a lot of guys, like, in the open mic days, and they were like, you got to be all bought in. You can't have a backup plan. And I was like, yeah, but now I can buy a camera.
You know, right. Like, yeah.
Like, I don't want to. Nobody was at the coffee shop writing jokes 10 hours a day while I was doing other shit. And I probably wrote more than people because
yeah.
I would write on the way to work and on the way to the mic. And it's, you know, it's like if you have a little bit less time, you're probably going to get more done if you're in the swing.
There's accountability. Shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like that's something I definitely would like tell younger comics is like, yeah, you may want to jump in and be full time.
Yeah.
It's like a lot of full time comics I know live in their car.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, like it's not
great. Yeah.
And you want comedy to still be fun. And if it's your like your means of living, it can suck the fun out really quick.
And you're going to develop at the rate you're going to develop, but for a lot of people, it's just going to take a long time.
Yep.
And so you actually buy yourself extra years by taking some pressure off, which does help you creatively get to where you want to be instead of just having to, you know, rough it in your car.
Well, especially like a comedy adjacent job like you did with like Chubby's. Didn't you just like email them and then like you just start working with them?
Yeah, I went to, I was in sales at the time and a comedian, you know, Dave Nihil?
Yes.
He's doing really well. He's crushing it now. He ran this conference called Funny Biz and he was like, I know you hate your sales job. You should come to this marketing thing. I have tons of funny marketing people and maybe you'll meet someone you like. And there was a dude, Mason from Chubby's, spoke at that and was basically like, yeah, we live in San Francisco. We should make viral videos for a living. I was like, are you shitting me?
Yeah.
Like, that's what I want to do. So I went home that night immediately and like sent an email with like all my like clips and like stuff that I'd done. And then, got the job. And for 5 years was able to, we had like a comedy podcast at the peak of it for when I was having fun. We had like we were just an hour-long comedy podcast. We were doing skits, and, like, that was it. That was my job, you know, which was awesome. And then it did help me learn how to – it helped me learn how to edit. It helped me learn how to use Photoshop. It helped me learn how to do email marketing. So all the stuff that I do now for myself, a lot of those skill sets were learned from
from doing it there.
Yeah, that's what I've even done. Like, I've written for like Harmon Brothers. Mm-hmm. They create like viral like advertisements for companies.
Yeah.
So I've like written some for them as well. So I think there's different ways you can, beyond just standing on a stage, you can get creative with how you make money in this game beyond
totally
on stage.
Totally. It's getting harder for brands to go viral now, because there was a time where it was like, oh, we have a following, we'll just make funny shit. And now it's like social media is so competitive. Now they're competing with like all the comedians and all the musicians.
Yeah.
Everyone's just putting shit out there.
I'm almost at a point now, dude. It's like so many comedians are doing this one thing that I'm almost like, I'd rather this show blow up. And then, like, I just keep developing as a comedian instead of, like, you're saying the grind is literally, like, perform, record it, edit yeah. it, like basically optimize it to be shareable. And, like, there's so many different things beyond just being funny on stage where I'm almost like, I mean, I may just keep just doing this show and hope that this works and just keep developing as a comedian and doing colleges and stuff. Like,
totally. I mean, yeah, I think attacking it on multiple fronts is always the best way to go because you have no idea what's going to stick. Like,
right.
I'm, like, doing well in the clip game now, but I'm like, okay, I need to start a podcast because I need, even if it's a smaller community, a more dedicated community that'll be like listening every week. And like, you know, and also it's fun. I think that at the end of the day, you do have to listen to yourself a little bit and be like, what do I want to do?
Yeah.
What is exciting to me?
You know? Do you want to live on the road?
But right.
Once you start getting out on the, because pre-pandemic, I was getting on the road a lot and I got home during the pandemic, and I was like, I don't know if I want to just live or rely on the road.
It is funny. Sometimes you're like, can we do a balance? Like, I had like a crazy tour, and it was awesome. I wanted to do it. I mean, it was great, and they did a great job setting it up. But there was a moment where I was like, we could save some of these markets and do like a couple every month. And I can focus on them and do like content about that market and
right.
try and like, you know, build up towards that. Instead of just emptying the clip on everything all at once. So if there's 1,000 ways to do it, I think that the real thing is no one can decide for you. You just got to figure
mm-hmm.
out what you want to do. Because it's like, yeah, traveling all the time isn't great, but a rewarding headlining show, and especially if it's filmed well and you get clips out of it, it's like that's the best for me right now.
And what percentage of your show, because a lot of what you do post jokes as well, and
yep.
you post hilarious sketches as well, but like, what percentage of your show is like now crowd work, and is like that portion really literally just like, all right, clip time?
Yeah, I would say it's probably like on average, it's probably 40% material, 20% crowd work. And I would say if you ask the average person on the way out of the show, they would tell you it was, wait, I just didn't. That didn't even add.
It added up.
Yeah,
oh, it added up to 60%.
No, that was just, that's amazing. So here's what the reason that I did that is 40 minutes material, 20 minutes crowd work.
Gotcha.
Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. I was like, wait, percent. Yeah, 40 minutes of material, 20 minutes crowd work. And I think the way people's brains work when they leave the show, they would tell you it was 40 minutes crowd work, 20 minutes material, because they think it's like.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, what I do is I have segments where it's like, I know. With this current hour, I'm going to start with this. I'm going to do crowd work about this, and then it will lead to this segment. And then that way I can kind of do the whole thing live and like plug in segments where something happens so that I can just go with the flow of where the crowd work takes me.
Yeah.
But I know where the next one's going to hit.
How do you develop crowd work as like, do you have any like crowd work tips for comedians? Cause everyone's trying it now.
Yeah. That one's tough because I do think that like, people, it's so funny. People online are like, you plan it.
Right.
And I'm like, you think that I write scripts and hire actors. That's what you think I do. It's so much easier to just be yourself. And that is my advice, is to just be yourself. Like, I think that you do have to be authentic. I don't really like using tricks. Like, I think that the funniest stuff comes from just like being in the moment and interacting with people. That works better for my style of comedy because I am like personable. Tough if you're like a dry one-liner comic, like,
mm-hmm.
But I guess I would say everyone's gonna do it their own way. I think sometimes people's lean is to be too mean, and it like turns people off. And like, obviously you want to be funny, but like, I feel like I get better stuff when we all feel like we're laughing together, and then people are more willing to share with me, and the whole audience doesn't feel like I'm being a dick, and I don't feel like I'm being a dick, because I got into comedy to, you know, be a people pleaser, not to
be the coolest bully.
So sometimes they think it could be, it's kind of like what Steve Hofstetter probably like started this crowd work stuff way back in the day, and like comedian destroys.
Yeah.
So now maybe comedians feel like the way to go viral is like destroy heckler.
Yeah, there was a real, like, there definitely was an era of comedy that was all about, it was like the Bill Hicks level of like, you fucking mouth-breathing idiots, and the, like, Bill Burr Philly thing.
Right.
There's a fuck you persona, and that's fine. It's just, you better be about that life.
It better be authentic.
And, yeah, exactly, and it has to match up with the rest of your act. Yeah. I can't be fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, and then go into material that's not that guy. So,
yeah,
you know, everyone talks about finding your voice, but, like, really what it is like, how authentic can you be on stage? And then everything will come out in that voice.
Oh.
I think.
Do you feel like you've tapped in? I feel like I have glimpses, but I don't feel like I've been like, oh, I found my voice.
Yeah, I don't, because of the phrasing of that, I never felt that way, because it's like, it doesn't feel that way, but I do think that I have. And like, ultimately, I guess I think it's a lot more like, stand-up is not, you're not constructing something, I think. I was never trying to build a personality. It was more sculpting. Mm-hmm. It was like getting all the inauthentic shit and scraping it down to just being like kind of the funny version of me that exists with it inside me on stage. And I do feel like that I have found that. Like, I feel like I'm just very comfortable up there, you know?
How did you do it? How did you start to...
just sculpt it?
Yeah. It's like, how'd you start to sculpt there?
Just being on stage and just being like... I do think, like, a lot of the shitty shows that I've done helped me figure it out, because I realized I can't just do this joke right now because there's four people in this bar and it's honestly sociopathic for me to be hitting my beats and, like... So I just had to, because it felt so awkward to me, that I had to just start talking to people. And that's how I developed the crowd work skill. But it's also helped my writing, because it's just more like, it's more natural, you know?
Did you start to write about certain things that came off as authentic? Or was it, you mean like at those shows, you more were like conversational or trying to...
Like, I would pull up, I remember San Francisco, I would do this one at a place called the SF Eagle. It was not only a gay bar, it was a leather gay bar.
Nice.
So there were some dudes getting dominated back there. I think we walked out one time and a dude was fucking a guy in the ass. So we were like, whoa, dude. They were definitely on Molly, but there was only like six people in like the whole place. It was insane. It was an awesome place, dude. It was just San Francisco as hell. Bartender Steve, great dude, had AIDS, but he was like, it's fine now. I take pills, I'm good. You know, like, Eagle, baby. It was an awesome place. But yeah, it's like, I'd go up there, there'd be a dude like in the front row, like wearing nipple clamps. And, you know, I would have written some like inspired thing about how like we're all like bits of like cosmic like dust and like atoms, because I saw like one Neil deGrasse Tyson video and I wanted to like blow people's minds on some like Carlin shit.
Right.
Because I always would write like stuff that I thought was interesting and then try to make it funny. But then it's like, you launch into that and I was just felt like a loser. So then I just had to be like, sub with the nipple clamps. And not in a mean way. You can't piss off a nipple clamp guy. He might, you know, tie you up to a car battery.
I don't know. He's one of the six people there. You don't want to walk the crowd.
Exactly. So, yeah, I just got used to, like, trying to, like, I just didn't want to bomb. So I was just trying to, like, talk to people. And I think that with that in mind, you start writing on stage a little bit, and then you just start, like, so the stuff you start writing just comes out in your voice a little bit easier. But there are still times where I'll write something and I'll look at it before a show and I'll just go, what the fuck, dude? That's not going to work. And that's not you. And like,
yeah.
That's like belongs in your diary for sure. But you know.
Well, don't you organize all your jokes in like a Notion thing? Do you still do that?
I do have Notion. I mean, the organization should be better, but like I do have all my like sets and like show notes, you know, in a Notion doc
that you like will reference. Are you disciplined at that?
I always, so like what I do is like on the headlining tour, what I'll do is like I know what the hour is, but I still like seeing it written out for every show. So I'll like copy what I have, I'll paste it over to the new like last night I was in Louisville, I'll copy that, I'll paste it over to Atlanta. I'll write some like local jokes up top, and then I'll go back to my notes from Louisville, which either I'll write after I get off stage, or I'll review the footage and I'll write stuff that I said differently, stuff that worked, and I'll look at like all the like new stuff that I need to pay attention to so that I make sure that I hit those tags.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then if I have a new idea for something, I'll plug that in too. But
yeah, we can always romanticize, like, oh, I'm going to review this, I'm going to find new things.
Yeah.
But most of the time it's like, oh, I hate myself.
Yeah, yeah. But it is
part of it.
The flip side of that is like anxiety is a loaded word because it's an actual term, but like I'll get nervous for shows, and the way that I'll deal with that is just by like going over my notes like a lot.
Mm.
And that actually does help me, is I'm just like, okay, I want to hit this, I want to hit that. And that's kind of how I deal with being nervous.
How do you deal with the highs and lows of this game? Because like I've been going on a roller coaster lately, dude. How do you keep it fresh or keep it motivated? Because I mean, I've gone through, like, since the pandemic, man, there's been moments of like, I even want to do this. Like,
yeah.
And I've never felt like that. But like lately I've been thinking that, and it is like a relationship with comedy, to where you're like, it's like sometimes it's all love and other times you resent it. But it's like, I've kind of been going through it right now for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah. No, it can be tough. I mean, I think a lot of people do. And I think it's probably helpful for people, especially if it's like comics listening, to hear that, you know, people go through that. I've definitely had moments where I've thought about quitting, or I've left like a show and just been like in tears, like this is, but it's been a while. But ultimately, I think for me, when I have moments of being like, oh, I'm not where I want to be, my thought is always like, what is something new that I can do?
Hmm.
And like, okay, so stuff isn't working. Okay, I should write a sketch or try a new format of video that I've never tried before, because my thought is usually just like, okay, like, it's not like, oh, I'm not going to make this work. It's like, okay, what I'm doing isn't on the path of where I want to go, you know? But I'm like, I have no doubt that I'm going to get where I'm going. But if I'm in a rut, I try to figure out like what I need to do in that moment to shake things up and try something new. And sometimes you stumble upon brand new ground. So like, I do these mayor videos to promote shows. And that was because I was like going to, it was my first, I'll take one of those when you, my buddy just got back with some Topo Chicos.
So you want one? No, I'm good.
Good?
Yeah. I'm good. I'll pass out.
Yeah, smart.
I'll take a nap.
It's a stimulant for me.
Nice.
Yeah. Those came about because of like being nervous about, I was my first headlining show in San Francisco, and I was like, I couldn't even sleep one night, 'cause I was like, how am I going to sell tickets? I have no idea how to sell tickets. And it just like popped into my head. And so, 'cause I was like, I want something that's local, that's about the area. And then, so yeah, I guess when stuff's not going well, I try to just get creative.
Oh, yeah, and try new things.
Yeah.
That's smart. Okay. That's very helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think so. What do you do when you're feeling that way?
Yeah, I mean, it's really, only, I mean, of course, I've had terrible shows and stuff through the years, but like, it's only recently where I've been like, man, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. So like, I've been leaning into the podcast more. Like, I've really been focused on making this the best it can be and leveling up the production, as some people may be able to tell, I don't know, on this one. Yeah. But
well, you made a house call on this one, so yeah.
But and I've been leaning into this more and focusing. I'll still do stand up, but it's more like I said, I just came back from a college. I'm still doing like gigs. I'm not really out there grinding mics and like trying to develop new. I'm just like, I'll do the job.
You can also develop new in the midst of doing good gigs. Like, you don't have to mind forever. Like,
right.
There is a level of years in where it can probably be a little counterproductive, because you start playing bad. Like, it's so important for so much of comedy to just get comfortable on stage. Like, we were talking about.
Yeah.
I think I do jokes that are staples of my, you know, hour, that are some of the best parts of it, that I think would probably bomb at a mic.
Oh.
Potentially, you know, because it's just a different kind of, it's a different environment to survive in at a mic where there's only two people listening.
Yeah, for sure. But I feel like as comedian, maybe it's like, we're just so ingrained to be like, well, I've got to be grinding or I'm not a comedian. But there is the value to that of like taking higher quality shows and just working on stuff there.
And like grinding might be doing a podcast or learning how to, you know, whatever you need to do with this giant light.
Yeah.
You know, like, grinding comes in a lot of areas, but you do have to do it. Like, that is the one thing with the modern eras. It's like, you gotta, you can't just be like a, you know, I used to have this romantic notion of being like an artist, like floating around, just thinking about shit and like right. writing in a notebook and smoking a cig or whatever. But it's like, no, we're grinding on Adobe Premiere.
Oh yeah. And then it crashes every 10 minutes. Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. You can't find the media. It's like, yeah, that's all part of it.
Yeah. You know, but you know, it just kind of lines like, what do you want to happen? And, are the things you're doing giving you a chance to get there?
Yeah, I really want this to be like Inside the Actor's Studio for comedians. Like, I really want this to be the show where comedians want to come on to show that, like, the serious side of comedy of, like,
yeah,
we're all funny on stage, but, like, we're working nonstop type deal, you know?
Right.
Like, kind of look behind the curtain. And then also for comedians to be like, oh, so this is the reality of what it takes to become a comedian.
Right.
So that's, yeah, I mean, I'm cool with that more than, like, becoming like an arena act.
You right, know? Right.
If that happens, cool. But I'm more focused. This, I feel like this doesn't exist. Like, there's comedians doing things and building an audience. And this could be me just trying to cut a corner.
Right.
But I feel like this doesn't exist. So I'm leaning more in on this right now.
No, I mean, it makes sense. And it's like helpful to hear that. Cause otherwise, like, if this was a normal podcast, I'd be like, no one gives a shit. Like, all this like back end, like, oh, I'm editing and I'm sending emails and like, no, you know, let's just be funny and, you know,
yeah,
make a kooky joke about the horrible war crimes that are going on or, you know, just normal right. comedy.
Yeah, there's over 400 episodes of this, so I've leaned in.
Yeah. No, it's a valuable resource. And I think, I think it's got to be, I hope that open micers and, you know, people coming up can hear some of this because it's going to be different than you think.
Yeah.
But it's a really rewarding journey if you do it the right way, I think.
Well, do you have any like, I always ask guests on here as we start to land the plane, like, their worst bombing boo story? Is there one that just gives you PTSD every time you think about it?
Yeah, there are definitely two times in my career that I definitely like legit had like tears in my eyes going home and was like, I'm done. And like, one was in San Francisco. There's a great bar next to Cobb's Comedy Club called The Rockas, and they would have comedy there. It's not a great room for comedy. And, like, I don't even remember specifically what happened, but it was one of those shows where I was, like, I was so excited about my new joke. I was, like, this is, like, a new era for me as an artist. Like, yeah, it's funny, but, like, it's thought-provoking,
right.
You know? And I'm bringing it into, like, an open mic full of, you know, drunks and uninterested comedians. And it just ate shit, and my expectations were so high. And I remember walking out, and it was a San Francisco night. It was foggy. It started raining, and I swear to God, the entire walk home was uphill. I was just like, fucking metaphor, dude. Like, it was bad. Yeah. Yeah. And then another one was just the same thing. Just expectations of like, this is going to be a good joke. And it just sucked. And like the other one, I was living at my parents' house. I didn't have a job. It was right after I got out of college. Mm. And I was just like, I don't know if this is going to fucking work.
And you just started and you're like, I don't know, man.
I don't know if it's going to work. Like, because expectations were high. I remember I got off stage the first time. I did 7 minutes. The second time I did an entirely new 7. And I was like, all right, I'm 14 minutes in.
And you're like, I'm him.
Yeah, I was like, dude, when I get back to the States, I'll start shopping this around. It's HBO, you know, we're getting, and then now, you know, like,
right.
10 years in, I'm like, I could probably do a YouTube special. You know? I'm at that level, I think.
Is that what you're working towards? Because that's all your Don't Tell.
Yep.
But I have, you haven't put like a full special.
Yeah, I think that's the next step. It's either deciding if I want to do another Don't Tell or self-fund a full special, which I think I want to do is just then you start looking at the price of like, if you want to get that shot at a high level.
Darn. I think they're doing longer specials now.
They are. And I got a price quote and I was like, God damn. They're great. And that's probably who I want to do it with. But, you know, when you start looking at that level of investment, you're just like, you start looking at your own material and you're like, ooh, is this good? And I don't want to get to the point, like, you can talk yourself out of doing anything, because I could forever be like, I need to clean this up and do that and just get in the way of yourself doing anything. But it's also helpful to just have a lens of like, is this as good as it can be? Can I make this better? Or am I just trying to be like, yeah, this is what I'm doing.
Right.
Here it is.
So we'll see.
Well, do you have any closing advice for comedians out there?
Yeah, I think for prospective comedians who always ask, they're like, I've been writing and saying it right. Well, just do it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Just get going.
Yeah.
That's all that matters is just like, just get going, just go to mics. You're going to meet people early on. Also, be nice and be cool.
Yep.
You're going to meet people early on in your journey, and you have no idea. Those are going to be the most important people in your life 10 years later. They could be your best friends. They could be your worst enemies. They could be people with an opportunity, whatever. Just like, it's a community. It's a small community. It feels a lot bigger when you start because there's a lot more people. But if you move up the funnel, you're going to be around the same people.
Yep,
so like,
for sure.
Be cool, be kind, and just... don't overthink it. Just start working and shit'll happen. But when you're, I think what we said, like when you're at your lowest, just turn back to why you did it in the first place, which is being creative and try something different. Just try to be funny.
Well, Joey Avery, thanks for being on Hot Breath, man.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Hey, do you want to plug anything you have for the...
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, socials are all Joey Avery. So I got Instagram, TikTok, Facebook. I got a subreddit now.
Which has been Joe R. Curry, he's killing it.
He's killing it. And I posted something that was going viral on Reddit. And someone was like, hey, you should have your own sub like him.
Yeah.
And so I looked at his and I was like, holy shit, this is amazing. So I started one. And then website's joeyavery.com. And I'm on tour. I've got... by the time this comes out, New York, November 11th, Philly, November 12th, Boston, December 10th, and San Jose, December 20th.
Love it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Joey.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Hot Breath.
This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.